fresh off the block. The hustler just returned.
Welcome to the Success Lab podcast, where entrepreneurs collaborate to achieve greatness. And now your host, Beth Cochran.
Hey guys, welcome to the Success Lab podcast, episode number 34. In this episode, I'm in the lab with Patrick Matheson. He is a junior venture capitalist at Toba Capital, and we talk all things venture capital and how entrepreneurs can gauge if they do actually need funding, and if so, how to work with a VC. And we also talk about some of the processes that they implement just for helping the startups that they choose to invest in, how to get them set up for success. So I will flip it over to that interview and I'll meet up with you afterwards. I'm in the lab with Patrick Matheson. He is a junior venture capitalist with Toba Capital and works with a lot of startups. So I'm super excited to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is the first one you're doing with the video chat as opposed to just the audio?
No, this is the third one.
Oh, so. This is the third. It's a little spooky. You can tell immediately when you need a haircut.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of, it's interesting. It forces you to pay attention to certain other things.
Yep, trying to stay focused on the conversation. Well, I'm looking forward to chatting. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you because just the whole startup model really intrigues me. And then like how you guys select them, how you start working with them. Just super interesting. So, but I want to back up and can you tell us a little bit about your journey and kind of what brought you to Toba Capital and what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Chicago and I went to college out in the Midwest too. When I was in college, I wasn't especially thinking that I'd end up in technology. It wasn't like I was a computer science major or anything like super focused on that. I was a business major. And basically kind of ended up in California by sort of accident and luck. I met pretty randomly, an entrepreneur that had a startup. It's an enterprise software company in the Bay Area, and kind of hit it off with him. And while I was getting to know him, his company got acquired by Dell. So like a big 9-figure acquisition.
Wow.
And they were, I kept in contact with that entrepreneur, and after they got bought by Dell, they grew very quickly within Dell. The company was called Case Networks. And when they grew sufficiently, they were looking to hire a bunch of new people, and they had a role for me. And because I had a good relationship with that entrepreneur, him and I had talked about doing it. And I decided, okay, like nothing really to lose. Let's go to California. Like worst comes to worst, I'll just move back home later. No big deal. And that was a super good experience. I ended up working at Dell for 3 years in a bunch of roles. And what ended up happening towards the end of that was that entrepreneur who had started that company eventually left after putting in his 3 years at Dell. And he became shortly thereafter a partner at Toba Capital. And because him and I worked together for a really long time, I had the chance to come with him as well. So I left Dell in this April or this past April, and I started up at Toba Capital in July. So I've been here for 6 months. So still getting my feet wet with it, but it's super interesting industry for sure.
That's really cool. And I actually came across you on Quora because you answer a ton of questions and across like all different genres, everything from like entrepreneurship to obviously startup, and then even I think I saw some stuff about some Chipotle burritos.
Oh, yes.
But a lot of your responses were really, I thought just really well thought out, and, you seem super knowledgeable. So can you kind of take us through, like when you guys first start working with startups, I guess, what is like the due diligence process or what do you guys look for?
This is in the pre-investment phase, like when we're figuring out whether we want to get involved or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, that's a really good question. And like, anytime I talk about this, I answer it differently. Cause it's just, the short answer is it totally depends. I mean, at the very beginning, the way that you find companies that are interesting totally varies, right? I mean, there's, there's services that exist specifically for that. So for example, AngelList is one. Like, there's a lot of companies are listed. They're looking for funding. They're looking, they're putting themselves out there and looking to meet investors. And it's like a very, sort of like formalized process, and it's a, like a database and a server that's meant specifically, or it's a service that's meant specifically for that. On the other end, you just have like, oh, you know, my old college roommate is now working in Austin, Texas, and he's been working at this startup, and we catch up just casually over a beer or something. And, you know, he says, this is what I'm working on. And then we get interested that way. So there's this funky like blending of your personal and your professional life in this profession, because you're kind of always on. And especially if you live in the Bay Area, I live in downtown San Francisco. That's where I am right now. The technology startup scene is like everything. It's everywhere. So just, you know, go out to get a sandwich, go, you know, your friend's throwing a housewarming party. There's people there that are doing, that are building companies. And that's just a frequent topic of conversation here. Probably too much of a topic of conversation here. We probably need to like get better hobbies in this area. But it's, there's just a variety of ways you meet companies. So then basically the process would be, you know, for whatever reason, you have some pretense to interact with them. You basically have a first meeting, and that could be a call or in person. And it's sort of like, it's not a pitch per se, but it's just like a half an hour to an hour, relatively informal meeting. Like, tell me who you are. Tell me what you're working on. Like, where did the idea come from? How big is your company? Why is your product special? What is, you know, compelling about what you're working on? And what are your goals as far as where you want to take the business, and what are your goals for fundraising? That's definitely a collaborative conversation, because there's like a variety of scenarios in which people can take the business that requires either a little outside money, tons of outside money, somewhere in between. You know, the current model right now that's really popular is raise a ton of money and like shoot for the moon and try to be a $1 billion company. But there's a bunch of other scenarios, that might be better fits for other entrepreneurs. So you collaborate and you basically figure out, like, it's just like a date, basically. You figure out, you know, are you a compelling company that might be in the realm of possibility to be in our portfolio that would make sense? And are we a good partner for the startup? Like, do they need money? Excuse me. Do our experiences and expertise line up well with the things they're trying to do better? So we're kind of evaluating each side. And then if we both feel good coming out of the first couple of meetings, then you start the diligence process. And that's like a whole bunch of stuff. That's, you know, going into financials, like understanding more about the market, talking to their customers, meeting their team. That's a pretty expansive process. And then at the end of it, you basically, we basically huddle up and say, are we going to do this or not? And the entrepreneurs do the same thing on their end, because presumably they're talking to other investors besides just us. So it's sort of like decision-making and competitive on both ends. And then if it goes well, you make a deal. That's about it.
Very cool. Very cool. So do you guys put together kind of a proposal of what you're willing to offer, and then the support that comes along with it?
Well, there's what's called a term sheet, which is it's the legal document that basically is the, you know, we're giving you this, amount of cash in exchange for this amount of equity, and has all the various, provisions. Like, there's a bunch of, you know, obscure legal terms and things that have to be in there too. For your listeners and your watchers, a great book that covers this is Venture Hacks, Venture Deals, by Brad Feld. If you're interested in what makes up term sheets, that is like the best resource out there. So that's just a little side note.
Oh, cool. I'll link to that in the show notes.
It's a really good book. Just kind of explains what we do in this industry. But, that's a legal document, but you don't really spend much time with the entrepreneur, like parsing line through line in the document. That's more of a lawyer thing. It's more of an informal conversation with the entrepreneur. Like, what are you looking for in terms of support from us? And how much are you looking to raise? And the former can vary. I think that's an important thing to point out. Like, not every entrepreneur wants, you know, help or assistance from us. Some of them just want cash, and that's okay. Like, that's a perfectly reasonable expectation of theirs. But that's something that we talk about before the deal is done.
Okay. And then you mentioned that you guys talk to their customers. How do you just call them up and ask them what their thoughts are, if they're like happy with the service, or how do you go about that?
That's pretty much it. That's, I mean, you pretty much described it. I mean, are you happy with the service? Are you happy with the salesmanship and the way that and the support that you've gotten from the company? How did you find out about that company? Did you have a competing product, a competitor's product in place that you actually threw out when you bought the new one? So like it was so compelling that you threw out your old stuff. Were they competing head to head with another product and they ended up winning? Like all those, the kind of qualitative like particulars of how they became a customer are just as important as how much they're enjoying the product currently, because that tells us as investors a lot about, okay, does this company have their head screwed on straight in respect to like their sales and their marketing processes.
That makes sense. Very cool. So then once you guys bring them on, and if they if they do want support, not just cash, how do you guys kind of, or do you help them kind of lay a solid foundation for growth, or how do you start working with them? I'm sure it varies by startup, but.
Yeah, it really depends on what kind of support they need. And different companies are going to require different kinds of support depending on where they're strong and where they're weak. So some companies, for example, they are, they'll have founders that are not particularly technical in the software space. So they're really good business people, but they need support when it comes to like the technical sophistication and the requirements for the products they're building. They wouldn't really be good fits for us because we're not really technical experts. We're more sales and marketing experts. So when the right way you want it to work up is that for it to work out is that their weaknesses and things that they want help on align well with our strengths. And in that case, it's we're go-to-market experts, we're sales and marketing experts. I don't know if we're actually experts, but I'd say comparatively compared to the technical skills, that's like where our strengths are. So ideally, the company would be like a really technically sophisticated company that's building good products that doesn't totally know how to build. Well, I'm sure they know how to build, but doesn't fully have their ideas fleshed out about like how big of a sales team do we need? How are we going to compensate our salespeople? Like how do we do territory management? Like what should our lead funnel and marketing operations look like? That's where we can provide a little more value. And so the perfect fit is a company that needs a little bit of assistance there.
Very cool. So can you go through some of those steps on how you help them like go to market or really market what they have to offer? Are there any like best practices or things that you guys find, processes that you go through with each one as far as helping them market?
Yeah, well, again, it's not necessarily each one, right? But for the ones that we're actually super engaged with, the first thing we do is look at their messaging and how they are positioning their product. We generally think that is probably the most important thing from the marketing side that companies can do. And the reason for that is that the way that you describe your product to customers affects everything in the sales and marketing process. Like from the first time they hear about your company to the first time they go on your website. Sorry, it's phone's beeping. To when they're first talking to salespeople, to when they're thinking about purchasing, like the positioning statement for what the product or service is like repeated over and over and over. So you really want to get that right. And what a lot of entrepreneurs need some work is that they've built something like that's really technically sophisticated. It's got all these features, and they want like to explain what all of them are all the time. And what happens is you get really long-winded and like it's really hard for people to understand what you mean. The example I use is Uber. So Uber, for example, like you could describe it as it's a peer-to-peer like sharing economy on demand, like mobile backend for like transportation in the future, right?
Yeah.
And that would describe a lot of the strengths of the product. But when you're talking about it to people, you really need to say, hey, it's an app on your phone that hails a taxi and it's cheaper than a regular taxi. Like that's basically it.
Yeah.
We have some marketing and positioning agencies that we work with that are really good that we refer some of our entrepreneurs to that basically do these projects, which are, you know, there's like 10 plausible ways you could describe what your company is. Let's make a list of them. Let's try them out in front of a bunch of customers and see what resonates the most. And let's see if we can get that as on point, crisp, and precise and concise as possible, so that when, like I said, at every stage that a plausible customer is interacting with your company, you're nailing it and you're getting that right. So before you do any of the, before you're doing like analytics on the sales funnel or like any more heavyweight analysis on how a company's sales and marketing are doing, like thing number one is, are we explaining what this product is in a clear manner? That's like goal number one, basically.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That's so key. It's because even if you're doing like media outreach or anything like that, that's what the media is going to glom onto, those few message points. And so you have to be careful what you're putting out there. To kind of back up, how can startups evaluate if they actually do need investor capital or even how much they need? Maybe they can just go it on their own and don't need a VC, or how can they, I don't know, pinpoint that?
I think that's a great question. My general statement on this question is, I think that right now, at least in the technology industry, there's too much emphasis on raising outside money. And by that, I mean, there's too much emphasis in like people like us. If you go on TechCrunch or something and a company is just done, like you look at the front page and it's all like, company raised an enormous amount of money, like Uber just raised $1 billion, Instacart raised $200 million or something. Like we're celebrating the fundraising, but in reality, not every company needs to be built in a way that requires tons of outside capital. So I think your question is actually really great, because what I always, my general thoughts when talking to entrepreneurs are that you should think really carefully about whether you want to do this or not. And you should really think carefully about whether there's different ways to accomplish what you're trying to do without giving away a big slice of the equity in your company. You can probably do, among the management team of your company, do a scenario planning exercise where you basically like talk through a couple of versions of what the next couple of years could be like. Like one of them is, we don't raise any outside money. We just finance from our own cash flows and we build very slowly. We sort of, we call it bootstrapping. And then there's maybe another scenario, which is raise a little money. Like, what could we do with that money? What's the most high leverage activities we could do to like really get our name out there with just like, you know, a relatively modest amount of money. And then you could look at, okay, like let's raise the most enormous round possible. Like, what are all the things that would still be valuable if we had unlimited money? Like, what would we be doing? And then you can kind of evaluate, from the second scenario to the third scenario, would we really be that much better off? Like, would we really, would the business triple in comparison in those two scenarios? Or would it just maybe be like 20% bigger? Because if it's not going to, if you're going to run out of things to spend that money on, then it makes more sense as a founder for you to not dilute your shares in the company and give them away. Obviously, like our firm exists in the first place because we think it's a good thing sometimes for companies to raise outside money. But I don't think that should be the default. I think companies should think critically about whether that's what they want to do.
That's really cool that you said that. It definitely does seem kind of like a gold rush right now, like everyone trying to raise capital. So I think those are excellent tips. And we spoke earlier and we were talking about kind of how you often work with the startups on kind of generating more leads and then also tightening up any leaks that they might have in their lead funnel. Are there any tips or best practices you can share there?
About tightening up the lead funnel?
Yeah. If there's anything that entrepreneurs or startups can look for, any mistakes that they might be making unknowingly, if they have more of a tech-based business or maybe some sort of like digital online mm-hmm. business.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that entrepreneurs can do, the first one is the getting the messaging right. But following that is... And this is pretty standard stuff. I'm not like unleashing like vast wisdom here. This is like pretty well known in the technology community at this point. But you basically segment like all of your prospects into these different buckets and the different stages of your lead generation. They have different names for what the customer looks like in different categories. So typically it's like you have leads, then you have qualified leads, then you have opportunities, and then you have a sale. And that's basically like a lead is someone just goes to your website. Qualified lead is you talk to them and you figure out that, okay, they need, you know, they have budget for this solution, like they are looking to buy. Opportunity means you're like engaged with them, you're in the sales process, and then you eventually hopefully close the deal with them. I think in the very beginning, when you're just starting your company, you're like trying to sell everything you possibly can. And you're just like on the phone all day, and there's no real, formalization of the steps of the process. But as you get bigger, thinking discreetly about, okay, like in the very beginning, like just for our leads, like what are they seeing and what do we want them to do? And that could be, okay, we want them on the website and we want them to call us. Like that's the objective. And then when they're on the phone with you, then what you're doing is you're qualifying them and you're figuring out if this is even going to be, worth your time to try to sell this person, or is it just like, you know, someone who wandered over to your page? If you do that for every step of the process and you think really discreetly about, okay, like these are my goals and these are the criteria for getting to the next stage, then you can sort of like slice up into bands the whole process leading up into when you actually sell, and then you can just think about those in like more easy to use sizable chunks. And then you can make decisions about personnel. Like, okay, we have this salesperson is only going to talk to people early in the early stage. And this person is better at closing deals. So this salesperson is going to talk to just people at the end. You can make better management decisions when you just like, you sort of bucket these things in different ways. And as your company gets like really big, these will get even more fine tuned, and like more fine grained separation. And you'll have like a real lead generation machine, but just for the really beginning, like just starting to think about them as these different buckets is useful.
That makes sense. I don't know how this plays into any of the startups that you work with, but a lot of companies have been taking on content marketing and using that as a lead generation tool. Mm-hmm. How much do you guys?
Kind of like you guys. This is, we're in content right now, right?
Yeah, I think so. how does that kind of play into, do you think that there's, at least for your startups, do they do much of that?
Yeah. I think that's the, that's like the buzzword du jour, right?
Yeah.
Is content marketing. Everyone is, it seems to be working. If you carve out whatever niche it is that your company is really, has some expertise on, is good at, and you start writing about it and you start giving away your content for free and putting your name out there, then, you know, some companies, like the people that are really good at it are these guys like HubSpot, for example. Like,
yeah,
they, you know, like I don't know what the numbers are, but I bet like something like 70% of their leads are people that just, or sorry, 70% of their sales are probably from people that are reading their newsletter and reading their articles and then eventually hear about the company and buy. That's kind of the way to do it nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. Their HubSpot's amazing. They, one of their, they probably don't call them salespeople, but she emailed me out of the blue, and normally I'll just delete things like that. I do download a lot of their white papers though, but her email caught my eye because she actually took the time to look through my website and pinpoint things that could be improved, and then spent like 30 minutes on the phone with me, giving me ideas on how to basically improve the site and be a better content marketer.
I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's a perfect example of the way things are going. I think the old model was that you'd only give away things and give away your time with the immediate expectation then, you know, like person's going to put down their credit card or sign up or like be a customer or do the trial or whatever. But the content model is you give it away for free, and basically the less that you demand of your readers, then the more that they're emotionally going to like you and want to talk to you.
Yeah, that's so true. It's so when, and I'm sure this varies across all of the startups you work with, but are there any automation tools that you guys utilize, like attracting them to the site and then trying to capture their email address, or is there a funnel that you kind of lead them through, or does it, you mentioned phone calls a lot. Are they more about like the personal touch points, or is it more an automated process for generating leads?
There's a push pull. There's a there's like a conflict between automating more things and then making, and then the other, like certain things are people will argue for doing them in a more automated way. And certain things people will say, like the personal touch, is the way to do it. And I mean, the example you just gave is great. Like if they had automated all that whole process, with talking to you, they would get to, either over email or something, they would communicate with a lot more people because you can send out 10,000 emails at once and that person can only talk to you like one-on-one. But it made more of an impression on you. And now you're on this podcast and you're talking about them and you're actually, I mean, you were just doing marketing for HubSpot, right?
Good
then.
Point.
Like, they recruited you under the team. You can try all these approaches out and you can track the performance of them. Like you can basically A/B test this. You can say, okay, for half of these prospects, we're just going to send them an email within 30 seconds of signing up that like tells them A, B, and C. And then for this other half, we're going to call them and spend a half an hour with them and talk to them. And then you look at how many converted to customers in each scenario, versus the cost of your marketer's time on the phone. And then you say, okay, like one of these is probably going to be more effective. But it varies business to business, right? Like certain products, you know, you would never do like mortuary services or something like with some like totally automated, you know, like thing that has no personal touch or whatever. Like it varies by industry and it varies by the expectations of your customer. So you got to try stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. That's hilarious. So are you seeing any trends across the start, like types of startups that are launching right now? Are they
market or like, what do you mean?
Yeah. Are they in, well, I know you said you work primarily more with like tech kind of startups. Are there, I don't know, certain trends among, products that they're developing or things like that?
Well, I can only speak about, I mean, we mostly do software investments and they're mostly business software investments. So we don't do like consumer web things, but I think the big trend is they're getting really good. Companies, it's kind of amazing what a few people with laptops can pull together and mm-hmm. companies, you know, it used to be that you had to get the office and you had to get like the mainframe and the server racks and all that stuff in place before you could even build anything. Look, now you can, like people are hacking together prototypes for products in a week and then testing them out with customers and like seeing if this stuff is real really early in the process and then not committing any resources or not committing a lot of resources to the project until they're validating it. This is all like stuff in the lean startup movement type stuff. But I think it's working. I mean, I think it's leading to companies that know a lot earlier in the process whether they're building products are for anyone that's actually going to buy them. So I think it's a good thing. I think they're getting better.
That's very cool. Yeah, it does. It seems like that. There's, I mean, new tools launch every day for business owners that it does seem like they're improving and kind of combining what multiple different services offer, but all into one.
Yeah. Can I ask you the same question? Like sure. what are you thinking is super interesting and things that you're seeing? I mean, you talk to a lot of people.
Well, a lot with just online business models. So, and membership based models is huge. Mm-hmm. Everything is a push towards membership models. But it just seems like that's where everyone's kind of headed, just to try to get that reoccurring monthly mm-hmm. revenue.
Yes. We love recurring revenue.
Yeah.
People love recurring revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's, I don't know. I've had this conversation a lot with some other entrepreneurs who are thinking about launching some sort of membership model business and just talking about how that, that $9.99 a month or under $10 a month really flies under the radar. So it's like, even if people are not utilizing the service, they don't typically cancel it because it takes more effort or whatever to cancel it. And there's like, oh, it's $10 a month. Keep
yeah,
it going.
My roommate and I were talking about that last night. He was telling me that he signed up for the trial of audible.com after hearing about it on a podcast. And then 6 months later, he was like, oh crap, they've been charging me $15 a month for 6 months and I haven't listened to a podcast. Damn it.
I did that, but I was listening to ebooks like crazy.
Yeah, everyone,
or audiobooks.
Some people love the ebooks and the podcasts, and some people just don't do it at all. It'll be interesting to see what that's like in 5 years. Obviously, you like audio podcasts and things. We're like in one right now.
Yeah, yeah. I do love podcasts, but I love like a physical book still.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is.
I completely agree. It's the smell. You can smell the pages.
Yeah, that's true.
The scent of paper.
As long as it's a new book, not a used book. I'm just kidding. So I was going to ask you, too, if there's any tips or tools or even a book. I know you mentioned one earlier, but that you could share with entrepreneurs that you either find really valuable yourself or that you often recommend to the startups you're working with.
Mm-hmm. Can I pimp out Toba Capital portfolio companies?
Sure.
okay.
If they're good.
Right on. Oh, they're all good. They're excellent. there's one, and this mostly applies to more technology companies, but we have a tool called ClearSlide, and it's basically, it's meant for web presentations and for screen sharing. So for example, you were, giving, just like the people we were talking about that are salespeople, like giving web presentations on their product to people, sort of the equivalent of Skype or WebEx or something. ClearSlide's a company in our portfolio that does that really well, and they're growing super quickly, and their product is getting awesome in a hurry. So if that describes your business at all, anything that you're doing presentations over the web and you want to get analytics and insight into what kind of stuff in those presentations that your prospects are looking at so that you can get better at selling, ClearSlide is a very good tool for that. That's all the portfolio company pimping I'll do. But I will recommend two other things. One tool that we use at Toba is called Slack. Do you use that? Do you use that at all, Beth?
Yes, I just started. Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, it's like a chat and internal communication tool. It seems like everyone's using it now. This company is growing. It's like the fastest growing company probably in the world right now. But they just have a good product. Like you don't need to use Slack. There's stuff like HipChat. There's other products that are similar. But anything that just helps the people on your team, especially in remote teams where people are working in different states, anything that keeps the dialogue going just on a constant basis during the day, just allows you to stay in touch and get a lot more work done. So that's tools like that are very useful, I think, and anyone can use them. And then just for, you mentioned books, but I just think for general knowledge, I think everyone should be on Quora. There's so much good content on Quora, whether it's about starting businesses or it's about politics or it's about like fitness or just there's subject matter experts on pretty much anything. And it's a really fascinating community. And I think you can also ask questions too. So as an entrepreneur, if you're running into a business issue and you don't see that question already, you can throw out to the community and people will weigh in. It's a great tool.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I love Quora. It's amazing.
It's great. Yeah.
So last question, how can people connect with you or Toba Capital?
Yeah, well, I mean, great segue right there. I do the vast majority of my writing on Quora. If anyone listened to this and hopefully enjoyed it even a tiny bit, I'd love if you gave me a search on Quora. You can follow me there. My name is Patrick Matheson. You can also message me there. So I do, that's like my primary method for kind of talking to people in the startup community that I haven't met yet is just through the messaging app within Quora. So if you find me there and you read some of my answers and you want to talk about anything, just send me a message on there. I'd love to talk to you. For Toba Capital specifically, if you or any of your listeners are running a technology growth company, specifically, usually software, but just anything in the tech startup category, please check out tobacapital.com. We have our portfolio there and we have some details about our fund. And there's information how to get in contact with us at the bottom of the page. There's an email address, Twitter, all that sort of stuff. If you think you might be interested in fundraising or just kind of want to talk about startup stuff, please don't hesitate to get in contact.
Very cool. Thank you so much. You shared some awesome information.
Thank you very much. This was super fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again to Patrick. That was an awesome interview. And hopefully for any of you guys thinking about seeking venture capital or any type of investment, hopefully this demystified the process a little bit. So on to this week's biz hack. So have you ever been on a site and wondered what tools they are using? Maybe you wanted to also integrate kind of a similar feature on your site, but you didn't know how. Well, I just came across, well, actually a friend told me about it, a tool called BuiltWith. And it's this really cool Chrome plugin that allows you to see what exactly they're using on a particular site. So once you've installed that plugin, you can navigate to any site, hit the plugin icon at the top of your toolbar, and then a little drop-down box appears with all of the info in there. So it's so much easier than trying to search through HTML code to figure out what they implemented into their site. BuiltWith is actually a larger software company. The plugin is just a free tool that they offer, but they allow you to generate leads, conduct market analysis, and gain sales intelligence through their software. That software does come with a fairly pricey monthly cost, but there are some really great free tools on their site too. There's trend reports that you can check out for free, and a couple other market analysis type tools. So head over to builtwith.com. It's worth a look, and I'll throw a link in the show notes too. It's pretty cool. So this week's action item. So when it comes to maintaining laser focus and productivity, we often hear that you should say no more. But the challenge is it's tough to do that, and even tougher to stick with it in the long run. But as it turns out, how you say no can actually impact your success rate for sticking with it. And this applies kind of a little bit more to creating new habits and resisting temptations as opposed to saying no to a friend who asks you for a ride to the airport or something like that. But the trick is to say I don't rather than I can't. So there's been actual research conducted on this, and they found students who told themselves, I can't eat X, gave into temptation 61% more of the time, whereas the students who said, I don't eat X, only gave in 36% of the time. And this simple shift in terminology helped them stick to what they said over the long haul. So the term I can't is also kind of a reminder of our own limitations, whereas I don't is more empowering. It's more of an affirmation. So your action item this week is to practice awareness when it comes to saying no. And every time you find yourself saying I can't, try to just replace it with I don't, an I don't statement. So I don't schedule meetings Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays. I don't work past 8 p.m. I don't browse Facebook between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. You get the idea. But just use those I don't statements in place of I can't. So quote of the week. And this one fits in perfectly with this. It's from Leonardo da Vinci. One can have no smaller or greater mastery than mastery of oneself. One can have no smaller or greater mastery than mastery of oneself. Let that sink in a minute. So next week, I am in the lab with Ivo Terra. He is one of the earliest adopters that I knew of in podcasting. He co-authored Expert Podcasting Practices for Dummies in 2007 and Podcasting for Dummies in 2008. He has also gone on to author several other books and is also the co-founder of Podiobooks.com and several other businesses. But most recently, he's been operating a business consultation company for startups and entrepreneurs called Big Bounce. And currently, he's traveling with his wife around the world. They took off on their adventure earlier this month, and they're tracking it all at Shevo, S-H-E-V-O dot W-T-F. Hilarious. But I've known him for years and super excited to talk to him kind of outside just the general networking realm. So be sure to tune in next week. It should be a really great interview. And for any past action items, interviews, biz hacks, head over to successlabber.com. They can all be found there. And if you have a spare moment, head over to iTunes and leave a quick review. So until next time, have a prosperous week.
Thanks for tuning into the Success Lab podcast. For more resources and collaboration, visit successlabber.com. And that's lab with an R.
Let's go again. I love you, haters. They make my focus strong. They keep me motivated to get my hustle on. Get my guap up. No Scott Storchin, but 30s on the truck. Now that's a wheel of fortune.
Come on, baby, let the good time roll.